Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American Ned Evett is a performer, musician, and guitarist. He created the glass-necked fretless guitar and the glass slide capo, revolutionizing the way guitar music is played and heard. His performances are a thrilling fusion of technical brilliance and raw emotive power. Ned's CV reads like a who's who of music royalty. He has shared the stage with legends such as Leon Russell, the Allman Brothers Band, Robert Cray, Eric Johnson, Sting, John McLaughlin, and he recently finished opening for guitar icons Joe Satriani and Steve Vai in Europe. Guitar Player magazine calls him the world's first fretless guitar rock star, and his newest album, Strange Kind of Freedom, cements his place at the cutting edge of modern rock and guitar history. Up next on Celeb Savant, discussing his journey in the entertainment world and his upcoming tour of South Africa in September and October of 2025, is Ned Evett. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks. At the moment, I'm in Cape Town. So okay. I'm kind of local.
Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or a teenager, did you feel, okay, I want to be creating music, I want to be in this world, and how did that journey progress?
I was 11 years old and I inherited a ukulele from my mom. And she taught me a bunch of songs on the ukulele that her father had taught her. So it was in learning how to do that that really made me think, oh, I could do this. I could play songs and strum and entertain people. And that summer at 11, I played in front of my classroom at school. And I brought the house down. And I remember going, okay, this is something. I should stick with this. And so here we are all these years later.
So how did that thought of you wanting to do it at the age of 11, how did that transpire to you actually be doing it professionally?
Well, when I was 14, like 3 years later, and my hormones kicked in, I discovered rock and roll. And so pretty much as soon as you had the hormones combined with the electric guitar, I just kept going. I've never looked back. If you're really passionate about music, as you know, and you dig in early, you get the attention of adults. Like people in their 20s are like, okay, this 15-year-old kid can really play. And a lot of times they will mentor you. They'll extend a hand. And this is what happened to me. So I wound up playing with a lot of older musicians, learning to play at shows. And before you know it, you're a professional guitar player even before you've left high school. That's what happened to me.
So when they were mentoring you, were you actually performing with them at shows, or they were just sort of part-time mentoring you?
A mix of both.
Okay.
Some people, like, for example, one guy gave me my first guitar, like not a ukulele, but like guitar for Christmas, because he knew I wanted to play. His wife taught me chords. But then eventually, people from the local guitar shop would say, hey, man, you want to do a wedding next week? And it kind of just goes from there. As you know, it's like you're just kind of thrown into these things in your early years. And if you can hang, if you can function and learn songs and do all of it, then you just kind of keep going.
And what about performing live? As you were thrown into it, as you mentioned, surprised you that you didn't realize would be part of the process?
The fear. I didn't realize how scary it would be that first couple of times. Like, wow, you know? And I had to master that. I had to master stage fright before I could continue on. But I was able to do that. So there's these thresholds that you pass. And that was one of the thresholds. The thing I didn't realize was it's intimidating being up in front of people initially.
How did you master that stage fright?
I would say it was definitely like almost like a a meditative type process. You just tell yourself, I'm not going to be scared, and you just kind of like hold it together. You train your nervous system not to get freaky. Yeah. For example, this is a good point. Like Eddie Van Halen famously said, he was really nervous as a kid, and his dad taught him how to drink alcohol before every show, which turned, unfortunately, into a lifelong issue with alcohol, which I think if you could avoid doing that, you know, you really, it's in your best interest as a young musician to avoid drugs and alcohol as a means of being comfortable on stage.
Yeah.
I think it's a huge mistake. I was able to avoid it just by mind over matter kind of thing.
It's interesting you say that, because beyond the stage, and this is a perception that I have, is that a lot of people use, especially alcohol, I mean, drugs is something different, different conversation, but people often use alcohol to remove their inhibitions. So you often find people going for dinner, going for parties, just being out and like, oh, I need to drink. And it's not a need of drinking. It's that feeling of, okay, I need to remove my inhibitions to be able to relax and enjoy myself. It's a very societal thing that's happened, because it's a thing that people have had to learn to, okay, I need to put masks on in different situations. And in order to remove those masks and just be myself, I need outside things to allow me to remove them. So it's just an observation on my part. And it goes beyond just being on stage.
Yeah, I mean, those are very good points. And when you remember, of course, music often happens for most of us in a club, mm-hmm. where there's alcohol. Mm-hmm. It just becomes a slippery slope. And what I would just say to people is, if you just literally wait 5 minutes, we all get nervous around people. If you can just wait 5 minutes, your real personality will show up. But it's usually too nervous that first 5 minutes. So if you reach for a drink to kind of get it to present itself quicker, you're always going to need that drink.
Yeah. What do you love about the guitar?
I love that the guitar is still interesting after playing it for all these years, you know what I mean? It's like you get great at it, you feel pretty good about yourself, and then you get into a hole and you suck and you reach a plateau, and then you just keep going with that process of slowly learning more. I mean, it's crazy, right? It's like Hendrix and those guys in the late 60s, and that's 50, 60 years ago, and people are still discovering new things to do with it. You know, I play fretless guitar, so that's kind of my take on it. But many people like come up with their own unique sort of thing that they do with it. It's just so versatile, you know what I mean? And people still dig it. People still love to come out to shows and see people play the guitar.
What is fretless guitar?
Fretless guitar is a variation on regular guitar. Most guitars have metal ridges down the fingerboard that if you put your finger here, that's an F. If you put your finger here, that's a G. On my guitars, if you put your finger here, it's sort of an F. And then there's literally 12 notes between two notes, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So I have more notes. It's more like a violin or a cello or slide guitar. And kind of, it's one of those things. It's very challenging, but it's also very rewarding after you invest the time and you get it down.
First of all, how did you find the fretless guitar? In what part of your journey in being in the music industry did you find that specific part of the instrument, and what attracted you to say, okay, I want to now play on this?
I would say when I was like 15 or 16, I saw a guitar player named Adrian Belew play fretless guitar on television with a band called King Crimson, and he brought it out for one song, and I was so taken with it. But that when he put it away, I was bummed. I'm like, oh, I want more fretless guitar. When's he going to bring that back? And he never did. So I went, I'm going to develop a style that's nothing but fretless guitar so I can listen to it all night long. So that, in a nutshell, that's how it happened. And it's really funny because years later, I met Adrian Belew and he produced one of my albums in the studio. So I got to work with the guy that gave me the idea in the first place, which was a really amazing experience.
You reference that it's more challenging and more practice to use a fretless guitar, and that you mentioned 12 chords at between A and B, if I'm correct in my understanding. What other things or other aspects about it is different to playing a normal, in inverted commas, guitar?
It has a more vocal sound. It has a quality to it. It's hard to just, unless you're actually playing it, and it's kind of hard to describe. But I would say I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, where we play a lot of country music, a lot of blues music. Fretless guitar allows you to get into that sound very readily once you've invested the time and you're playing it. It's got that sort of bluesy element is inherent in the guitar. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things I love about it.
You said it takes time to invest to learn to play on it. How much more time does it take to learn to play on this compared to, again, in inverted commas, a normal guitar?
The joke is it takes 2 years playing fretless guitar just to suck.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if that's true, but guitar learning curve is pretty steep. It's like you have to be willing to suck for a period of time before you start to get the good feeling and the good feedback. Fretless guitar, the learning curve is even steeper. But that being said, you can play regular guitar with frets and chords and then pick up the fretless guitar after you have some facility. That's how I did it. I don't play fretted guitars anymore. I just play fretless guitar is all I do.
What keeps motivating you to get up on stage and perform?
One of the things is I play with some of the greatest guitar players in history and in the world at the moment. I just got off a 2-month tour touring with Joe Satriani and Steve Vai as their opening act. And when you're playing with musicians of that caliber, it pushes you. And beyond that, just playing for an audience of new people every night who you've never met are hearing you for the first time. You want them to have the best time. I want fans to have the most fun listening to music, to clap their hands, to sing along. So that's very important to me, too. So keeping up with my peers and just making sure everybody in the audience has a good time, those two things will always just motivate me to be my best every night. Giving 100% mm-hmm. every night. That's one of the things I love about South Africa is the crowds here are very into rock and roll. And I love that energy that you get back. If you play, they give you that energy back.
Okay, I'm that dude that's right up in front. I'm jamming, I'm dancing. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, and I put it away. I notice these days, people are posting and tweeting and videoing and more a lot of time of the concert. Yeah. You reference the clapping of the hands and you reference that energy exchange. Do you not feel that people busy on their cell phones, well, first of all, they can't really clap, but do you not feel that takes away from that moment, that energy that you're referencing, or it's just where society is at this stage?
To answer that question, I would say the society is definitely at that stage where we're filming things as opposed to being in the moment 100%. By the same token, people will go home later and they'll watch the video and they'll send it to their friends, which gets more people out to your show. I used to be kind of bummed out when people were pulling out their phones. Uh-huh. Now I'm bummed out if they don't, because unless they're sharing the experience, it almost feels like you're not doing something right. Paul McCartney said something funny. He's like, when I play my hits, the phones go up. When I don't play my hits, the phones go down, which I thought was kind of sad. But
exactly. I love that you said that. Okay, so now how do you create a song?
I create songs from different angles. Sometimes I'll come up with a great line. My father was an English professor, so I grew up with a lot of Shakespeare, Milton, an appreciation for words, Monty Python for funny stuff, you know what I mean? Sometimes I'll think of a phrase, and then the secret is getting that phrase to fit with a chord sequence, you know, a series of chords. So a lot of times I'll think of a phrase, and then I'll come up with a chord sequence, and before I know it, I play my glass guitar, I wondering where you are, and it all kind of comes together at the same time. I write songs pretty quickly, like a couple of times through, I've got the kernel of the song down, and then you just develop it.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you put in your creative process. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm unsure if you are aware, massive uptick of physical around the world. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on, and there needs to be a high number of exchanges daily for a product to be in the basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily, and again, inverted commas, the older nostalgic people. Then we have streaming platforms that people consume music on. What is your observation of the landscape at the moment?
I would echo exactly what you're saying. I just got off this European tour and I had a vinyl record and I had CDs for sale, and they physical product is kind of back. They want to buy the physical product. They want you to sign it, which is part of what drives it, but they really do listen to it later. The only thing that I would say is that streaming is very useful if you are an original songwriter and you want people to come out to see you live. Streaming has an amazing reach. It doesn't pay as well as selling a vinyl record, but the experience, somebody's driving to work and they have Spotify on and they're listening to your record. I'm grateful Spotify exists so they can have that experience with me. Kids love cassettes again, which is so mind-blowing. Like, a cassette tape? Really? And I love the fact that people are, again, sort of experiencing the CD thing, because I thought CDs, you know, they had better audio quality for bass and for dynamic range. And you still could sit down with a CD. You could read the lyrics.
Totally agree with you. And for me, it's that sound quality. So I was living overseas. I came back to South Africa a couple of years ago and I wanted to get a CD player. And everyone would say to me, oh, there's no ways to can get CD players anywhere anymore. And I was hoping to find one option. And in South Africa, there's a similar platform to Amazon called Takealot. I went on there hoping for one option. And there were like 50 to 100. I had to narrow it down and narrow it down. I got my CD player. And I love the quality of sound. This is like an envelopment of and a hug from sound. Whereas I find on the DSPs, it's like flat and sort of not all-encompassing. Other artists have said to me, Spotify is like your business card. So it gives you the business card to the listeners so that they can hear who you are, which gives you the invitation to then go to those countries to perform.
Absolutely. YouTube as well. YouTube kind of functions in the same way. People will use YouTube to sort of see if you are good. Like, I saw your name. I saw you play a glass guitar, but I wanted to see if you're any good. So I went to YouTube. And then they kind of evaluate if you can do it live. It's very interesting the way that consumers are using these tools to find new music, to, like you said, the inverted economy, connect with stuff that they used to know. And of course, you know, it's too much. There's too much music out there to ever listen to anymore. And now with AI getting involved, creating music, I really feel it's going to come down for a while. Who can play live? Who can I go see be a human being on stage? And I think that paradigm will exist for a while still. And I'm happy about that because I'm a human being who plays on stage.
Yes. So you've got your upcoming tour of South Africa, which is going to be happening in September. You're going to be going all around the country. Is this your first time performing here?
Second.
Okay.
I was here in December and January of 2024 and early 2025. Okay. And I loved it. So I'm coming back for more. I have a South African backing band called the Cracker Jacks.
Okay.
Who are extraordinary. They are very dedicated. They have learned my music and I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled. I'm thrilled at the enthusiasm that South Africans have for music and also the business, you know, they're very cognizant about, you know, where people are at. Like, it's, you, things are expensive here, times are tight, but people still want to go see music. How can we make that happen for them? And I like the concern the musicians have here for the crowds and the fans.
What can the crowds expect? What can the fans expect from the upcoming tour?
They can expect fretless guitar, glass. I have this guitar that's made of glass. Mm-hmm. I have a titanium fretless guitar. And we're also making a guitar right here in South Africa, a fretless guitar with a glass fingerboard that we're going to raffle off at the end of the tour.
Oh, wow.
If you get off the couch and you get a ticket to one of my shows, it enters you into the drawing for that fretless guitar. So the band is just, again, the band is very rocking. It's going to be a night of fantastic guitar playing and also very memorable songs. People can sing along. They can clap their hands. It's definitely a, you know, a songwriter sort of thing as well. It's, I think that's the most important thing almost, is the song, as opposed to, like, you know, what you're playing it on. So,
okay, I get you, Ned. I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 10 hours, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that, and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs of theirs, what songs would you play of theirs?
That's actually a great question on what song. That's actually a really great part of that question, because an artist, you know, of course, they have probably multiple records out, multiple songs. I would listen to Michael Hedges, a song called Aerial Boundaries. I would listen to Radiohead. I would listen to Subterranean Homesick Alien. I would listen to Van Halen's Push Come to Shove off of the Fair Warning record. I would listen to Bob Marley's Natty Dread off the Natty Dread record. And finally, I would probably listen to Mozart's Concerto for Harp and Flute.
Wow. It's,
and that would be my five songs.
Awesome. It spans all the genres. I love it. And I know if I literally had to ask you this question now, another five would come. That's why I love the little game that we play. Ned, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
I would like to say we are one world. We are a tiny blue dot hurling through space at 600,000 miles an hour or whatever. And we are all in this together. Anything that we can do as human beings to stabilize ourselves together as a community, we should do. And I feel live music is a great way to do that. Probably the best sports, live music, dance, art. We only live once. And in order to pass the experience of being human beings on to the next generation, we have to stick together in this life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.